Good evening. Delighted to be here and to share with you insights which we have got through analyzing, in particular, electricity, which I'm going to focus upon. It may contradict some of what John said, but we've done lots of analysis for the UK government, European Commission, and also with Climate Change Committee. I'm going to focus on the interaction of demand and supply side in the kind of lower carbon world. We have already been here very briefly what the UK response to climate change challenges. There is we want to decarbonize and we want to have a supply by 2020, about 20% of energy to be supplied by lower carbon generation, which is renewables and nuclear. 2030 plus, there is lots of emphasis in decarbonizing this further, while at the same time trying to electrify potentially parts of heat and transport sector, whether through hydrogen or through direct electricity, and that's all to do to try to reach the target that John mentioned, 80% reduction by 2050. And as kind of engineers, we like to say that from the engineering perspective, this is, you know, we engineers can do much bigger magic than making low carbon energy systems. Yeah, engineers have sent mankind to the moon 50 years ago. Yeah, so the old questions are in here about at what cost we are going to achieve that. So and my area of work is around system integration. How are we going to put this together? And I'll try to focus on this, not necessarily on digital technologies. If you just look at our 2020 vision, we've got there is a penetration of wind and solar in the system. UK has got a massive resource of wind, and we have, over the last 2 years, you may know, we have been leading at the European level development of solar. The biggest amount of solar installed in any other country in Europe the last 2 years is the UK. And we say we can discuss how much sun there is in the UK. It may not be a very long conversation, but we certainly, solar is part of that. But what the problem with this one is that even if we put these technologies in, we would displace energy produced by coal and gas. That's the whole point. But we actually won't be able to close those power stations because what do we do when winds stop blowing and sun is not there? You know, the peak demands are in 7 p.m. and if we've got solar and the sun is gone at 2:30, so you know, how are we going to make that demand? So, you know, and that fundamentally looks into, demonstrates that there will be huge amounts of plant if we do this, sitting there not doing very much. Utilization will be very, very, very low. Now going forward, and this is just the utilization where we are currently. Average utilization of our plants is about 55% because we've got some of the plants, obviously like nuclear, they run 80% or more, 90% load factors. But because demand over in winter is about three times bigger than demand in summer, over summer lots of plant sits there not doing very much. So average utilization is about 55%. If we do this, it's going to drop to 35%. Now, if we then start trying to electrify bits of transport and heat sector, which is, John mentioned very clearly, that this is where the big challenges are, and potentially there is interest in parts of those to be electrified, when you analyze those, they've got exactly the wrong feature in this context because the peaks are disproportionately higher than the energy which these sectors consumes. Because, you know, if you know, very cold winter day, we're going to all have this on, and also the transport sector has a very similar feature. So the utilization of the infrastructure, you can see, will half or even go beyond that, which fundamentally means doubling the asset base for the same amount of energy delivered. Yeah? This is very, in other words, very expensive proposition, or we need to do something about it. So that decline in utilization is what worries us. And you've all seen this from John. The other element which is on the electricity system important is, as John mentioned, and so I don't need to spend much time on this, is that we need to balance demand and supply in real time. For example, when you switch the lights on, you immediately see the lights because, if I can be a little bit simplistic, because there is a generator somewhere producing a little bit more power for your light bulb. Now imagine if we put wind, solar, and nuclear. Wind will produces wind when it's windy, not when you switch the lights on. The same applies to solar, and also nuclear power stations, we are running them flat out because they potentially could do this, but the cost of that goes to the roof if we start manipulating lots of wind. So how are we going to manage demand-supply balance on a second-by-second basis if you've got these plants? This is just analysis now shows in here that, and we analyze what the present government and carbon and the climate change committee scenarios are, and this shows if we do this in the way which is being done, you know, the last few decades, if you look at just the blue system, which is we're going to have an inflexible system, this would mean that we would not be able to absorb more than 25% of production of renewables. Instead, you're going to burn coal and gas while we build the plant. In other words, very expensive proposition. We cannot possibly afford to build all of that and then not being able to make use of it. Yeah. And so this is just to say that there is a problem, and that my focus will be on the flexibility, and there is a massive opportunity to increase flexibility of the system and actually make this work. And currently it's not being recognized fully, but hopefully there is now growing debate, and we hope that some of our work has contributed to provide evidence as to why this is important. So we can't afford to have, on the previous one, utilization dropping massively, and then secondly, that we actually won't be able to absorb production of low carbon generation, which is, as John said, very expensive. We can't afford that. So to just do a bit of summary is that this is the utilization dropping in a kind of business usual world, but there is a smart world coming up which can help us in reversing the trend of this concept which we currently have by using new technologies which are emerging and becoming economically efficient to reverse this trend, to increase utilization of the assets, and also being able to absorb cost-effectively these difficult renewables, and also nuclear is part of that as well. And these are, and I'm going to just to discuss a little bit about demand-side response, because this is about kind of trying to link demand and supply. We currently don't have that, but that's where the big things are. And also, there is also need, this is slightly more difficult, but there is also need to, again, move from the how we keep the lights on today. We've got redundancy in assets. That's how we, you know, how the system works at a very high reliability level. We've just got lots of assets sitting there, lots of network assets as well. Yeah, but this system has been designed in philosophy of the operation in 1950s. And I have to say that, you know, I found myself, you know, two or three years ago, explaining to talking to my youngest daughter and finding myself in difficulty to explain to her that world did exist even before iPad was invented. Yeah? But these things are 1950s, and we need to move on from there. Yeah? And what this is, our analysis demonstrates, that the savings, if we get this right and pay for all this, is going to be 60 billion. This is actually, you know, small number, 60 billion savings to get this right, use storage and demand side response in particular, and shift from redundancy to intelligence. And our analysis demonstrates that the same thing at the European level, we'll be making savings for more than 500 billion euros. And we say, given that kind of, you know, financial crisis, we are broke, we can't ignore those numbers. We must get this right. I'll just give you an example or just to explain the philosophy in here. This demonstrates how the present electricity, but also energy system works. We've got production on the left-hand side generators, which inject power into national transmission network, which ships power in bulk from where the power stations are to where the demand is, and then trickles down to various voltage levels and comes to where we are, to our appliances. Yeah, and the present philosophy of operating this system is that we say what the demand is, and then try to build the infrastructure to meet that demand. That is 19th century approach. We have, over the last, there is huge amounts of now work and evidence growing that there is in here, on this end, there is massive flexibility which can be used to make this system operating incredibly more efficient, both all the wires, but also the generation system to make actually this work and to facilitate significantly, to facilitate the transition to a lower carbon world at a much lower cost overall. And I'll give you a brief example of my dishwasher. I've got a smart dishwasher, but I find myself explaining how I got it if I've got a, you know, two or three glasses of wine, so you won't find out today, yeah? But I can tell you how it works. So when you finish with your kind of dinner and wine in the evening, and you put the stuff in, 10 p.m. in my case, and you've got two options to press. The option which starts immediately to do the job, or smart option, which sends three signals through the smart meter, which according to the UK government I'm going to have in 2019, to somebody who knows to do what to do with it. And this information is as follows. The first one is this. There is, at say, 10:15 p.m., dishwasher available to start in 6 Old Farm House Drive in Oxshott, which is where I live. The second piece of information is how long is the cycle, half an hour, 2 hours, you know, how much wine you had that evening. And the third one is, the most important one is, when you want this to be done by. In my case, 6:30 a.m. when I wake up, I want to have a cup of tea from a freshly cleaned mug, but I don't really, you know, I don't sleep near the dishwasher, so, you know, fortunate enough. So I don't, in fact, whether it starts at midnight or 1 a.m. or 2 p.m., you know, I don't care, as long as by 6:30 everything is done. Now, we have done the analysis of this showing that today the value of that would be very small. In 2030, following the what carbon, the Climate Change Committee and DEC visioned, the value of that, you should be getting paid £150 per year, getting paid for washing your dishes, if you press smart option, okay? When people who are now coming, you know, kind of newcomers into the electricity market, they say, well, given that this dishwasher, or the other thing which is important, the cost of that dishwasher is only, there is no difference, it's €3 is more expensive than the ordinary one, yeah? Because it's really, this is all to do just with the Wi-Fi signal, and it's got a code in the already sophisticated microprocessor. There is nothing in there, it's just a few lines of code. There is no kit in there at all, so it's for free. And you so then say, because dishwasher costs about £350, so they say, well, if that's the case, we're going to buy dishwashers to potentially poor people, you know, so who can't afford this, and if they stay with us for and press smart option regularly, yeah, and stay with us for 3 or 4 years, everybody's happy. You know, you're gonna make it work. There is, of course, issues around the business models around this, because this is, you know, if I a little bit to be aggressive to or extreme in this, is that the present industry works, the business model is build assets and get rate of return on the assets you build. Smart is all about don't build assets, make best use of what we've got. But currently there is no money in there. There is nobody who is doing this because the regulation and the, you know, government are not put in place the right incentives to make sure that the right things actually happen. Great that John has explained how the frequency works. So I won't. This is several years ago, where we demonstrated. We're looking into whether the refrigeration, which can support this when we lose a big power station for a few minutes, we can switch off the refrigeration. And this is the question as to whether this can be done. And the researchers who work with me told me that this refrigerator in there can't do this because we need to put something in to get the inertia inside, as John mentioned. So given that we've got this in our laboratory, they decided to put stuff in to demonstrate that the refrigerator is working. And there were on Fridays kind of regular deep scientific experiments in the afternoons measuring the thermal inertia of different type of beer, yeah? Just to cut the long story short, this is how the refrigerator would help with this, and there will be then, as also John showed, there will be kind of the payback, in, or, you know, there will be increase in load, and that's because the beer is getting warm potentially. But I've now been in the UK for more than 20 years, and I've learned that the warm beer is not an issue. So we certainly can make that work. And this is just to show you what the benefits of that will be if we build nuclear renewables, how it goes between now and 2050. You can see we are talking hundreds of pounds, potentially going to £500 for enabling your refrigerator to be used. But there will be no compromise on the, you know, your beer will be at the temperature you want it to be. Yeah, so massive importance of demand flexibility in this. So interaction of demand and supply, the value is just going incredibly increasing. This is just a little example on storage. So I'm not sure I would agree with what we've seen with John, but we can discuss that in a minute. This is just to show you if you look at the. These diagrams have got the benefits in billions are on the y-axis, and this is the 2015, 2030, 2050. Just to give you a feel where we currently are, if you look at the £1,000 per kilowatt, the first bar on the left-hand side, that is the cost of, around cost of a pump storage scheme in North Wales. If you've been there, there is a Dinorwic Electric Mountain. So if you happen to be there, I really recommend to go and see Electric Mountain. Phenomenal engineering achievement. It was built, you know, 20 more years ago. Although the economically there was no really justification, but engineers have made it. So what this shows, and don't forget that the storage is something which is has got a kind of fundamental problem, because what it does, this station is about 75% efficient, which means you, when you charge it and discharge it, you waste. So it costs lots of money and wastes 25% of energy you put in. The question is how desperate we need to be building that sort of kit. So it's not a generator, it just wastes energy. Yeah? But you can see in here, if when we go to 2030, if we start doing nuclear and renewables, you can see that for £1,000 a kilowatt, the third bar in the middle, we want to have seven of these plants. That is how difficult balancing of demand and supply is when we move to that very low carbon world. And that's why the interaction of demand and supply, you know, is massively important, and this is what I want to maybe a minute or two to spend. We have just now completed the work with the Climate Change Committee, informing how the quantifying what John mentioned, the cost of low carbon technologies. As we know, how we compare, because we've used what's concept called levelized cost, which is what's the cost of building the plant and getting it operating. But there is obviously in here additional cost of these low carbon technologies because you need to put them together. And if you put solar, for example, you would not be able to retire conventional plant, because what do we do in the evenings when sun is not there? Well, if you put nuclear, you can retire plant because nuclear is going to run during peak conditions, yeah? So, but normally, when we work with governments and climate change, they normally give you their scenarios. But now, for the first time, we knew what the cost, they gave us the cost of technologies. So we said, rather than looking at your scenarios, let us look at what's the best answer for the UK PLC. Because they give us cost of nuclear, cost of wind, cost of solar, and cost of CCS. Yeah? So rather than analyzing the scenario, let's see what is the right answer for the UK, given what the costs are. And this is where the key message regarding the interaction between the demand and supply comes. So the thing to focus upon are low carbon technology, which is CCS. You can see this kind of the second from the bottom. Then nuclear is purple. Then wind is green, and PV is solar is yellow. So if there is no flexibility, if we don't have smart dishwashers, we don't use any of the demand flexibility, and I need to mention here that demand flexibility in here, there is no compromise on service quality. All your champagne glasses will be ready when you need them, and all your shirts and socks are also done when you need them. There is no, you know, you're not going to wear the wrong things, yeah? So if there is no flexibility, the model says we should build 12.5 gigawatts of CCS and 33 gigawatts of nuclear. But once we start having flexibility, 25% flexibility, you can see that after that, CCS has disappeared. No more CCS. Nuclear dropped from 10%, and there was some appearance of wind and solar. If we now have the full flexible system, if all our stuff is pressing smart stuff, yeah, then we can see that the nuclear has gone to 9.10 gigawatts, so one third, while everything else in here is wind and solar. So if we get demand interacting with supply, you have a completely different mix of technologies. And the issue here is that the first one with CCS and nuclear is about £7 billion per annum more expensive than the bar on the right-hand side. This is how important flexibility is in terms of what's the right answer for the UK regarding the trying to respond to decarbonization. Maybe this is just to demonstrate a little bit I need to stop that. Let me just see whether I just want to say this one. This is the value of demand side response across the years. You can see in here that in 2030 is going to be about £5 billion pound per year. If we go to 2040, reaches 10 and goes to 11, 12 billion. What that means, when we discuss, there's lots of discussion about whether people will be bothered to press smart option or not. And given we are rolling out smart meters, we think it's important to have that option. And if we can't be bothered, no problem, our bills are going to be about beyond the present levels, 50% higher bills if we can't be bothered. And what that fundamentally means, and I'll stop at this, is that, look at this. We've done analysis to see the difference in bills of consumers who press smart option on their dishwasher versus the ones who can't, who don't want to do that. The difference in bills will be between 30 and 50% for the same amount of energy you consume if you press the smart option. So that fundamentally means that your bill will be determined more by the way in which you use energy than the amount of energy you use. And that is the completely different world from 1950s. And that's where we strongly believe that needs to be really taken into account. And I think this is, and there is obviously massive issues around the regulation, market design, but there is, very pleased that there is now very significant development in the UK and Europe to try to see how we can facilitate and design our markets to potentially open this opportunity up and get this interaction between the demand and supply and lower our bills massively. Thank you very much indeed.